General Pakenham, my lord.
Ah, come in, Ned. Sit down. Tell me, have you had any problems with the commissariat, getting rations up and so on?
My men have been marching 20 miles a day on near-starvation rations. And when the food does come up, it's not fit to eat. Then, when the poor devils do a bit of scrounging on the side, you threaten to hang them for looting. To answer your question, if I could get my hands on that commissary, I think I'd shoot him.
Well, you'll have to take your turn.
How's that?
The commissary was in here 5 minutes ago, complaining bitterly that Bob Crawford had threatened to shoot him.
Well, if Bob says he's going to, he probably will.
Yeah, that's what I'm frightened of. Mm. I've written to my brother Wellesley to sort the whole lot out. He's quite well in at Whitehall, and he's a damn sight more diplomatic than I am. How about a glass of Madeira, Ned? It's quite well, considering the shaking up it's had.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You know, talking of Whitehall, reminds me of St. James's Park. The favorite place for taking the air of a young person by the name of Harriet Wilson. Oh, you know her, Ned?
Most certainly I do. Thank you. As does about every beau, buck, and dandy serving in the peninsula. Not excepting my esteemed brother-in-law.
What? You know about me?
As does everybody between the Thames and the Tagus.
What?
Well, not everybody. I mean, not my sister Kitty, for example.
Well, it doesn't shock you, then, that I've been unfaithful to Kitty?
Not in the least. The only thing that mildly shocked me at the time was when you came back from India and proposed marriage to her. No one was expecting it.
How's that, then?
Well, you had been 5 years abroad. You were under no obligation, as we in the family saw it.
I felt I was under an obligation.
But when you got back, Kitty was almost engaged to Lowry Cole. You could have left it like that, and probably Kitty would be Lady Cole rather than Lady Wellington today.
I couldn't do that, Ned. Before I went to India, we had an understanding. By honor, I was obliged to repeat my offer of marriage when I came back. The surprise was that she accepted me.
For your sake, Arthur, more's the pity that she did. You and Kitty were never suited.
Yes, even our honeymoon wasn't a success. As I remember it, we spent most of the time playing music, scraping at our fiddles together.
Kitty has no great talent for the fiddle.
We must have sounded like two seagulls unsuccessfully trying to mate. But it was the nearest we ever came to passion.
One cannot be but sorry for both of you.
Well, it's nice of you to put it like that, Ned. As Kitty's brother, it would have been reasonable for you to have taken a less kindly view.
I'm just relieved that you and Lowry never came to calling each other out.
Oh, that would have been a novel way of deciding who you would have for a brother-in-law. Hey, Ned. Come in.
Good news, my lord.
Tell me.
El Charro has attacked an important convoy on its way to Ciudad Rodrigo and captured a lot of booty.
Is your source of information reliable, Alex?
A subaltern of the Rifles, Smith. He's here now.
Oh, that saucy fellow who's always trying to lay hands on me greyhounds.
That's the one, sir. He was with El Charro at the time.
Oh, was he? Begod. Send him in.
Yes, sir.
You know, Ned, there are some people in this army who simply regard this campaign as a government-sponsored sporting tour.
I'm not surprised. The commander-in-chief sets them a pretty good example.
Lieutenant Smith, my lord. Sir.
Sit down, Smith. This is General Pakenham.
I know the general by sight, sir.
Now, first of all, Smith, what the devil were you doing with Sanchez, or El Charro, as he likes to be called?
I was on patrol with the light dragoons, my lord. My colonel gave me leave to because I speak Spanish.
Your colonel seems to give you quite a lot of license one way and another. What happened?
Well, sir, we came across El Charro's men on the banks of the Coa. Don Julian expressed a wish to speak to a British officer, so I went. He was a bit prickly at first, but we got on all right in the end.
Yeah, tell me about the convoy.
Yes, sir. Well, in the early hours of Wednesday morning, Julian, that is El Charro, got an urgent message emanating from Badajoz, I think, that there was a large convoy approaching Ciudad Rodrigo under escort of a squadron of cavalry and a battalion of infantry. Julian decided to attack it.
And what business had you to take part?
Well, sir, under the circumstances, I could hardly say goodbye. I think I'll go home now, could I? So I went along.
Squadron of cavalry and an infantry battalion. Quite a tall order. I warned Sanchez against pitched battles.
Oh, well, proceed. By first light, we were in position near a quarry to the east of the town. Soon after, we saw the convoy approaching. Cavalry in front, then a number of stores wagons, including one which appeared to be very heavy because it was drawn by 6 mules. And finally, the infantry taking up the rear. Julian sent out a detachment of Charros. They can really ride, those fellows.
Yes, go on.
They were to go and pull faces at the Frenchmen. The French cavalry immediately gave chase, and the Charros, pretending to be running away, led them beautifully into the quarry where we blocked them in. I don't suppose any of them got out alive.
Meanwhile,
sir, the commander of the convoy must have lost his head, because he ordered the stores wagons to make a run for it towards the town, while the infantry formed square to receive cavalry.
What then?
Well, we just ignored the infantry and stood there looking silly, whilst we galloped off after the transports, well out of musket range. Julian had a new cannon which he was very anxious to try out.
Oh, so he's going for artillery now, is he?
Yes, sir. Again, luck was on our side, because the third shot caught the big wagon full amidships and blew it up. It was the pay chest, full of gold coin. There was gold all over the place. A lot of coins got blown into the bodies of the drivers. In fact, the commanding officer of the convoy himself was riddled with doubloons. I'm afraid the Charros were not too nice about picking the coins out with their knives. He was dead by this time, of course.
Well, I'm glad about that. What happened to the infantry?
When they saw we'd captured all the stores, they just formed up and withdrew. I tried to organize a charge, but, well, with all that gold about the place...
Yes, quite. There are certain factors in war that Whitehall never takes into account. Ladies, loot...
And corrupt commissaries, I might add.
Yes, there may be one less by now. Very well, Smith. Go back to Colonel Barnard and tell him I'll second you to the guerrillas any time he wants to get rid of you.
Very good, my lord. Thank you.
Worth keeping an eye on that young fellow, Ned. He's got initiative and intelligence.
I've heard he's quite a gallant officer.
I'm sick of gallant officers. The army's full of them. What I need is a few more officers with a touch of cowardice and a lot more brain.
Why have so many of these coins got a black sticky substance on them, I wonder? 199... 200 gold doblones for the convent. How very kind of Don Julia.
What a lovely windfall, Reverend Mother. What are you going to do with it?
Oh, it is so much that one's doing, Sister Rosario. The lavatories are a disgrace. But the junior school needs new desks.
Oh, they do. Never mind about the lavatories, Reverend Mother. We're Spanish.
Lord Wellington finally caught up with Massena and defeated him at Fuentes de Oñoro, just as El Charro had predicted. Poor Massena, perhaps the best of Napoleon's generals, was ignominiously recalled and his place taken by the much younger Marshal Marmont. By January 1812, the peer had taken Ciudad Rodrigo, where, sadly, Bob Crawford was killed leading the assault. But this success now opened the way to Badajoz.
Please see who that is, sister.
Yes, Reverend Mother.
Juanita, I love you. It's Juanita de los Dolores, Reverend Mother.
Come in, Juanita. I've got some good news for you.
And I have got some for you, Reverend Mother. Ciudad Rodrigo has fallen to the English.
Oh, so you've heard already?
You mean to say you know?
I have just been informed of the fact.
Oh.
Sister Rosaria, would you please go to the refectory? And if the messenger has finished his meal, bring him here.
Very well, Reverend Mother.
Now, Juanita, how did you hear, Captain Sula?
Yes, Reverend Mother. The French seem very worried about the British advance. They are reinforcing everything and putting mines and horrible spikes and sharpened sword blades in all the likely places of attack.
So, now I have a surprise for you, Juanita. Huh? Come in.
Miguelito!
Oh, hello, Juanita.
Oh, I thought you were a prisoner of the French.
I was, but not anymore. Oh, I have so much to tell you.
Take your friend to the visitor's room, Juanita. You can have 10 minutes only because this young man must get back through the French lines before curfew. Now, off you go.
Oh, thank you, Reverend Mother. Come, Miguelin.
When we realized that the column was getting near Salamanca, we thought they'd probably put us in a prisoner of war camp there. Oh. So, it was now or never. A few of us made a break for it that night. all running in different directions. You know, one poor bastard. Oh, sorry, Juanita. One poor fellow got shot. But three of us got away to the woods and walked all night. We had no idea where we were at the time. But I now know that we were in the mountains near Sequeiros. There's plenty of water. But we had no food at all for 2 days and nights.
Oh, poor things.
Anyway, on the third morning, we ran into a patrol of charros who gave us food and took us back to their camp. Ah. When Don Julian found out who we were and where we came from, he signed the three of us on. I'm now one of his special messengers because I'm very good at getting through the French lines in and out of Badajoz.
It's wonderful that you are alive, Miguelín, and thank God for it.
Oh, it's so good to see you again, Juanita.
Do you think the English will come?
Do I think? Their advance guard is already across the Tagus, Al Alcantara.
Time is up, Miguelín. You have only 15 minutes before curfew.
Goodbye, Juanita. Oh, you are looking very pretty. Goodbye, Madre. Thank you for the meal.
Thank you for your information, Miguelín. Go carefully.
I will.
Oh, Reverend Mother, Miguelín says the British are at Alcantara.
They are obviously going to try and recapture by the horse, then.
Is that bad?
If the French are going to defend the town and you say that they are preparing to do so, of course it is.
Why?
It stands to reason. The harder the battle, the worse it must be for us. But if the English should win, and we must hope they do...
You think they might sack the town?
If it is God's will that they sack the town, they will sack it. They usually do. In which case, we must offer it up to God as a penance for our sins.
Reverend Mother, I am frightened.
Console yourself with the thought that General Wellington and his staff were well looked after when they were last in Badajoz.
That's true. Oh, but Reverend Mother...
Kiss me, child, and pray to Our Lady to make you as brave as she was.
After a 20-day battering from our guns, on Easter Sunday, 1812, the breaches in the walls of Badajoz were declared practicable. The scene was now set for one of the most savage battles of modern times. From every unit taking part, its forlorn hope, a storming party of volunteers to do or die, stood by to force an entry into this vital border fortress. But the French, under a resolute commander, were as equally determined to keep us out.
The breaches in the walls of Badajoz have been declared ready, and the assault will take place tonight. I'm calling for volunteers for the forlorn hope. The forlorn hope that's going in at the Trinidad breach. Major O'Hare and Captain Kincaid are leading it, and Sergeant Prickett is with them, and I need 7 more men. Volunteers for the forlorn hope. Come on, 13th platoon, let's have you.
What do you want to go and volunteer for, Pongo?
I just thought I would, that's all.
You must be balmy.
It's so bleeding cold here, I kind of fancied something a bit hotter.
Oh, yeah. You'll be in for a hot place soon enough, volunteering for the forlorn hope. You'll be roasting for all eternity.
Ah, very poetic. But I'll be in good company, won't I?
What do you mean?
Well, I volunteered for you as well, didn't I?
You what? You volunteered for me? Nobody can't volunteer for nobody else. It's a private matter. It cannot be done.
Smithy's got your name on his list, hasn't he, though?
I've not volunteered never in me bleeding life. Not for nothing, I haven't. Oh, God.
Captain Harry Smith, 95th Rifles. The breach and the ramparts were full of the enemy, looking quietly at us, although not firing a shot. As soon as our ladders were ready and the column in the very act to move, our commanding officer, Colonel Barnard, called out,
"Now, O'Hare!"
The very first shot from us brought down such a hail of fire as I shall never forget. We
flew at the ladders and rushed at the breach. But we were broken and carried no weight with us, though every soldier was a hero.
I am Corporal Edward Costello of the 95th Rifles. For the second time, I volunteered for the Forlorn Hope. After having received a double ration of grog, we fell in about 8 o'clock in the evening. I happened to be on the right of the front section when my old officer, Major O'Hare, came up with Captain Johnny Kincaid, both in command of the storming party. A pair of uglier men never walked together, but a brace of better soldiers never stood before the muzzle of a Frenchman's gun.
Now, a multitude bounded up the great breach as if driven by a whirlwind. But across the top glittered a range of sword blades, sharp-pointed, keen-edged on both sides, and firmly fixed in ponderous beams chained together and set deep in the ruins.
A rifleman stood among the sword blades on the top of one of the chevaux de frise. We made a glorious rush to follow, but alas, in vain. He was knocked over. All were awfully wounded, except, I believe, myself and little Freer of B Company.
I am Quartermaster William Surtees, 95th Rifles, and was stationed on a little knoll just back from the Trinidad Gate. All sorts of arms were plain at once. Guns, mortars, musketry, grenades, and barrels of gunpowder thrown down from the walls. While every few minutes, explosions from mines were taking place. Lord Wellington had also taken his stance upon this hill and appeared quite uneasy at the troops seeming to make no progress.
I saw my poor friend, Major Peter O'Hare, who saved my life at Fuentes de Onoro, lying dead upon the breach. Two or three musket balls had passed through his breast. I remembered his last words just before he marched off to lead the advance. He shook my hand, saying, "A lieutenant colonel, or cold meat in a few hours, Harry."
Officers of all ranks, followed more or less numerously by the men, were seen to start out as if struck by sudden madness and rush into the breach. 2 hours passed until these vain efforts had convinced the troops that the breach of Trinidad was impregnable.
His lordship now seemed to lose all patience, and aide-de-camp was sent to ascertain the cause of the delay. They flew like lightning, while the whole rampart round the town seemed enveloped in one flame of fire. At length, a dispatch arrived from General Picton, stating that he had established himself in the castle. This was cheering news to his lordship, who expressed very strongly the gratitude he felt for that gallant officer.
Corporal Costello, I heard a cheering, which I know to proceed from within the town, and shortly afterwards a cry of, "Blood and hounds, where's the light division?" I had been knocked off the ladder in the first rush, and there were dead and dying on top of me. I now attempted to rise, but found myself unable to stand. At this moment, I saw two or three riflemen moving towards me. One named Bombproof Palmer immediately exclaimed, "What? Is that you, Ned? We thought you laddermen all done for."
Yet who shall do justice to the bravery of the British soldiers? Who shall measure out the glory of men like O'Hare of the 95th, who perished on the breach at the head of the stormers, and with him nearly all the volunteers for that desperate service? Who shall describe the martial fury of that desperate rifleman who, in his resolution to win, thrust himself beneath the chained sword blades and there suffered the enemy to dash his head to pieces with the end of their muskets?
Comes a scene of horror I would willingly bury in oblivion. The atrocities committed by our soldiers on the poor,
innocent and defenseless inhabitants of the city, no words suffice to depict.
Supported by Palma, we proceeded in the direction of the marketplace. We entered a house that was occupied by a number of men of the 3rd Division. One of them, on perceiving me wounded, struck the neck off a bottle of wine and presented it to me, which relieved me for the time. Unhappily, they discovered the 2 daughters of the old patron who had concealed themselves upstairs. They were both young and very pretty. The mother, too, was shortly afterwards dragged from her hiding place. I will not dwell on the frightful scene that followed. Some other men broke into a local convent, and God forgive them, had their will on the nuns there.
Quartermaster Surtees, I went into a genteel house. The Spaniard told me the French quartermaster general had lived with him. I told him I too was a quartermaster. Then he kindly set a bottle of wine and 2 glasses on the table. I sat down and drank nearly the whole bottle of wine while he fried me some eggs and bacon.
Too truly did our heretofore noble soldiers disgrace themselves, though the officers exerted themselves to the utmost to repress it, many who had escaped the enemy being wounded by their own men. Yet this scene of debauchery, however cruel to many, to me, has been the cause of solace and the whole happiness of my life.
Look at those drunken sots. I'd kick their asses if I didn't know they'd turn around and bayonet me.
Last night's heroes, eh? Oh, look at that brute in women's clothes with a ham impaled on his bayonet. Wait till I catch them with their hangovers.
What can any decent Spaniard think of our people now? I hope the CNC hangs a few of the bastards. God, I feel as though I've been to Donnybrook Fair.
Well, nothing broken.
No, I don't think so.
You've got 2 bullet holes in your cap, did you know?
Have I? So I have. My pockets are full of dirt. Look at my trousers, covered in other people's blood. How did you manage to get away with it, Freya?
Well, at 5'2", I suppose one doesn't present a very big target.
Ah, come on. There's nothing else we can do here. Yeah. We might as well get back to camp.
I could do with a cup of tea.
If my man West hasn't got a brew on, he'll be returned to duty at the double.
Cup of tea, sir.
That's very welcome, West.
Here you are, Mr. Freer. You enjoy it while it's hot.
Thanks, West.
Oh, here comes Captain Kincaid.
My God, Johnny. I thought you were a goner. Where'd you get that fine horse from?
One of the French. I saved him from being skewered by a drunken Connaught Ranger. He gave it to me as a token of gratitude and esteem.
Who was he? An officer?
Yes, on the staff. Said he came from Bordeaux. Barsac or something.
You could call the horse Monsieur Barsac.
Tea, sir?
No, thanks, West. I think I've had too much brandy. Some drunken bastards from 3rd Division were trying to force old Nosey to drink with them.
Oh.
They were calling him Old Fellow, if you please.
Uh-oh, how did he like that?
Touched his hat with his forefinger, said morning, and rode on, as if he were going to breakfast at Doodles.
Cool devil.
Hey, who are those 2 women coming over?
They don't look like horse.
No, they seem to be coming here.
Good morning, gentlemen. You are British officer?
We are. 95th Rifles, ma'am. At your service.
Thank you. My name is Victoria de los Dolores, and this is my sister, Juana Maria, Juanita. We are trying to find our friends Lord Somerset and Captain Gordon. They live in our house when the English were in Badajoz before.
This is Captain Smith. He's a friend of Gordon's.
Good day, ladies. I'm sorry, I didn't hear your names.
Victoria de los Dolores and my sister Juanita.
They're looking for Somerset and Gordon.
I'm sorry to trouble you, but you see...
I wish I knew how to help you. They could be anywhere just after a battle. An army headquarters is at least a mile from here.
Oh, then tell me, please, who can help us? Yesterday, we had a house. We had clothes. We had food. Now we have nothing. Nothing.
See.
2 months ago, the French destroyed our farm at Olivenza, and today the English have destroyed our house in Badajoz. And look what your soldiers have done to our ears.
Oh,
they just tore our earrings out. We would have given them gladly, but they would not wait.
It distresses us very much to hear it.
And my sister, too. Look.
They are worse than brutes, I'm afraid, when they get hold of the drink.
The truth is, it may take some time to find Captain Gordon or Lord Fitzroy Somerset. Meanwhile, how can we help you, ma'am?
You are a British officer and honorable man. It is for that I am speaking to you. I am a married woman, and my husband is in the army of General Arrizaga. But I have not heard from him for 2 years. I must go to Madrid to find out if he is alive or dead.
That could be dangerous.
For myself, I am not worried. But it is for my sister, who is only 14.
Only 14?
I have to find my husband, and I must take our old maid with me, because a woman cannot travel alone.
Of course.
But I must find protection for my sister, which is why I wish to speak to our friend Lord Fitzroy and Captain Gordon.
Certainly, we shall help you to find your friends. But meanwhile, you both need look no further for protection. I will guarantee it here and now.
Thank you. But when I go to Madrid...
There are women belonging to the regiment who would gladly take care of your sister. She could be given a tent to herself. God knows, there are empty tents enough after last night. We could arrange that, couldn't we?
Well, I don't know. It's a bit irregular. I mean, we'd like to help. What do you think, Harry?
Damsel in distress and all that?
It's not good enough. What happens if, after Senora Victoria goes, we three get killed, wounded, or otherwise dispersed? No. It's quite clear what has to be done. Senora Victoria, there is only one way to guarantee your sister's safety and honor for the foreseeable future.
There is a way?
She must marry a British officer before you go. In other words, as soon as possible.
Marry? But who would want to marry me?
I would.
Harry, sir. Harry, old fellow.
Shut up, Johnny. Juanita. My name is Harry George Wakelin Smith. I'm a captain in the Rifle Corps. I would consider it an honor if you would consent to be my wife. If you wish, we shall be married immediately.
Juanita.
Please, Victoria. My name is Juana Maria de los Dolores de León. I can sew, and I can cook, and I speak good French. I am grateful for your offer of marriage, which, with my sister's permission, I accept.
But Juanita...
I will be a good and true wife to you as long as I live.
In It's a Long Way from Talavera, the first of two linked plays by Peter Luke, based on his novel The Other Side of the Hill, Michael Pennington played Arthur Wellesley, Lord Wellington. John Moffat, Major William Napier. Dominic Rickards, Captain Harry Smith. Cyril Jenkins, Juanita de los Dolores. Philip Sully, Don Julian Sanchez. And June Tobin, Madre Soledad. Major Lord Fitzroy Somerset was played by Christopher Good. Captain Alexander Gordon, David Bannerman. Corporal Prickett, Ronald Herdman. Rifleman Doubleday, Clarence Smith. Rifleman Jackman and Captain Freer, Mark Straker. Rifleman Palmer and Migueline, Neil Roberts. Rifleman West, Eric Allen. Captain Kincaid, Terence Edmund. Captain Sula and Lieutenant Dan Cardo, Alan Barker. General Crawford, General Menacho, and Quartermaster Surtees, Brett Usher. Lieutenant O'Malley and Corporal Costello, Andrew Winkett. General Pakenham and Onyo, Colin McFarlane. Victoria, Emma Fielding. Lady Wellesley, Melanie Hudson. Sister Rosario, Teresa Stratfield. The music was composed and conducted by Tom Eastwood and performed by Paul Archibald, Richard Bengerfield, Adrian Brett, Charles Dickey, Bill Worrell, and Simon Weinberg. The Other Side of the Hill was directed by Glyn Dearman.